Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey everyone, it's Mark from Guitar Nerd here with a slightly croaky voice because I'm recording this after the podcast you're just about to hear, which is me on my own for an hour. So stick around for that. It's an interesting one. Let me know your feedback. But the reason I'm here is I just wanted to drop some information, some knowledge, drop some science about Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where, as you know, from as little as $5 a month, you can get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds podcast content every week. Patreon have been making some cool changes that I thought you should know about before we dive into the episode. Basically, now whenever you sign up for Patreon, you get a customized RSS link that allows you to listen to Patreon content in your normal podcast provider. So if you've been putting off subscribing to the Patreon because you want to listen in the podcast app, or you want to listen to in Downcast or any other kind of podcast provider that accepts RSS feeds, you can now do that with Patreon. It means that you don't have to use their own app, which I think is still a bit clunky, and you don't have to go to their website. You can do it all in your regular podcast service. So that is super cool. Also worth mentioning that if you didn't know, you can go back and listen to the old content that we've done. And now there's about 40 or 50 hours worth of stuff on there. So, yes, it's a subscription, but just like Netflix, there's plenty of stuff you can go back and listen to. It's not just the weekly content. A whole archive of Joe Branton basically being a knob. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by absolutely no one. So this is a bit weird. Everyone is away. Matt is off doing some like Roland Boss stuff. Jay is just come back from America, I think. And Joe is off doing some touring and stuff. So it's just me on my own. You might notice that if you're watching the live stream tonight on ampli.fi/guitar nerds, we're in a different location. There's me. We're in a different location. So we're streaming live. This is essentially from my house this time around. We usually record these things at Jay's. If you're listening on the podcast, hopefully this doesn't make too much difference. It shouldn't sound too different. What might be different slightly is the content of the show. And the reason for that is obviously, you know, normally we do an hour. There's four of us here a lot of the time. It might be a little bit difficult for me to do an hour tonight. I'll try. And hopefully the questions from the Facebook group and the questions that are coming in live on the Amplify chat should keep us going, because we've got a fair amount of material and there's a fair amount of news. But there's only so much of my voice that I can listen to, and probably so much that you guys can listen to. So, let's see how we do. I'm not really sure how to do this. Like, what's the format? Normally I hand off to Matt Knight to talk about news stuff and hand off to Joe to do his funny voices and general like nonsense, basically. I'm not really sure how this is going to go, but stick with us. Worth mentioning also this week that the Patreon episode Matt did on his own, because we wanted to see like, if I could do this one, I wanted to see if one of the other lads could handle a whole Patreon episode on their own. And yeah, I think Matt did a really good job. I've been listening to it earlier, actually. He does a thing where he's talking about his rig and he's also playing the pedals and stuff. Like, it's a kind of a first for guitar nerds, really, because we don't have any we don't usually have any guitar playing on here. It's usually we're just rambling. So yeah, I'm going to be rambling for an hour. There's not going to be any guitar played on this episode, unfortunately. But on Matt's episode on the Patreon, there's plenty of guitar playing. So yeah, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Also worth mentioning, just in case you missed it as well, just let's get the business stuff out of the way before we dive into news. Patreon have just announced that they are now allowing you to get an RSS feed for your Patreon episodes, which means that if you want to, you can, if you sign up for the Patreon service, it means that you can get the episodes delivered into your regular podcast software. So either podcasts on Apple phones or, you know, whatever you use to listen to podcasts. So no going over to the Patreon site and stuff. So that's really cool. Also, I realised that there's like 40 hours worth of content on there now. So yeah, there is obviously a subscription charge, but you've already got 40 hours worth of stuff to listen to from $5 a month. And yeah, you get loads of stuff, and you can get it in your regular podcast player now as well. So that's super, super cool. Anyway, so yeah, Matt's episode is great. Go and listen to that for some actual guitar playing from guitar nerds for once. Because this episode is going to be rambly. There's no two ways about it. I don't really have the facilities here to play guitar, and also I'm not much of a guitar player. You know me, I'm way more of a bass player. So I don't think you guys would want to hear bass for an hour or half an hour even. So go and listen to Matt's episode, because it is super cool, and that will be going up as soon as this episode goes up. So yeah, go and check it out. So down to business, I guess. And in the time-honored Guitar Nerds format, we should do this week's news. Am I going to do the voices? I guess I should do the voices. News. If you're listening live, let me know what you thought of that. How does that stack up to Joe's news? I don't think it's probably as good. He's got a really good voice. He's really good at it. Just don't let him know. I hope he doesn't listen to this. Don't let him know he's good at anything. That's problematic. So, few bits of news this week. First up, we have loads of new pedals. MXR have just announced a really cool new pedal, the MXR Phase 95, which is a micro pedal. So obviously, you know, pedal board friendly. If you're stuck for space and you want a phaser, then the Phase 95 is a really, really good option by the looks of things. And bear in mind, I've not heard this yet, just been announced. But thanks, someone saying my news voice was way better than Branton's, which is great. So Phase 95, micro pedal, really, really small. It's like a Moore-sized pedal. What MXR have done is taken two of their most popular, in fact, four of their most popular phaser sounds, because you've got essentially in there the Phase 45 and the Phase 90, so two different types of phasing. And there's also a script button on off. So again, with the the Phase 90's always had, there's been two kind of tones really, a modern Phase 90 and the script logo Phase 90. So you can also get that from both of the sounds, from the 45 and from the 90. There's two different voices in there. So essentially you've got four different phaser voicings, just a speed control on the top, which is what you've come to expect from MXR phasers, I guess. And that basically is it. It looks fantastic. In fact, if you're watching on the live stream, I've forgotten I've done this. If you're listening on the podcast, there's going to be a few moments probably in this episode where I'm going to be referring to the live stream. I'm really sorry, but I need to fill time. And yeah, it's difficult when you're on your own. So look at this. I can do picture in picture on the live stream. And yeah, if you're not listening to this live, do go and check the live stream archive so I can put pictures up as I'm talking about something. So yeah, that's the Phase 95, which is an awesome, awesome little pedal. Just two controls essentially, the phase type and the script on and off, and then your speed control. So yeah, I think a worthy addition. I've been really getting into phasers, and I think we talked about it. I'm really into the F pedals phase vibe, which is just a cool little phaser designed in conjunction with a famous studio engineer whose name I've completely forgotten. Someone who does loads of the plugins for Waves, I believe. So whoever knows is going to be screaming at their podcast player right now to tell me that the name, shouting the name down there. The phase vibe is really cool. The F pedals phase vibe, but this the phase vibe does something very different because it's doing a lot of vibe stuff as well, as the name would suggest. It doesn't really sound like the MXR, and I'm really into phaser at the moment. So the Phase 95 could be an option. Let me know what you think of it in the Facebook group, or if you're listening live in the comments as well. I think the Phase 95 looks super cool. Cool. I think it sounds cool. Second piece of news is there's actually just a comment that's popped up saying pedals are getting smaller and smaller and bigger and bigger. This next news item actually kind of fits that theme. So next up is the new Electro-Harmonix Wailer Wah. If you were to look at a picture of this, you would say, what is that kind of... who's doing that crybaby, I think would be the thing. It's basically Electro-Harmonix's take on a crybaby, sort of. Because it's traditional housing, traditional crybaby housing, but it's the tone from their wireless wah, which I've forgotten the name of, the crying tone, I think it was called, which, if you remember, a few years ago, Electro-Harmonix released a wah that worked on like a gyro, like a movement sensor almost. So the whole pedal was just the treadle, and you kind of had the treadle just by itself on the floor, I guess. Didn't have any feet on it or anything like that. The whole pedal rocked forwards and backwards. Really interesting concept. And I think they did it with another pedal as well. I think it was a delay, or maybe it was a drive. Like, it can't have been drive, because you'd have to leave it in one position. I can't remember what the other one was. Maybe it was a volume pedal. I don't remember. Something else. But they had this kind of cool concept of this kind of completely... almost like a chassis-less wire, which had, if you imagine a crybaby, it just had the kind of top part, the treadle, as it were, and that was like rounded. So instead of pushing down onto another block, it just rocked against the floor itself. Not great if you've got a pedal board, obviously, but if you're the sort of person who just has one pedal on stage, it was an interesting concept. Or maybe that and, you know, a distortion pedal, but not a pedal you could put on a board. What a lot of people have said about the crying tone is that they really liked the tone of it, but the housing is not conducive to most people's setup. You know, if you've got any sort of complicated pedal board or anything like that, just not worth it. So what Electro-Harmonix have done is essentially find that tone again in a more traditional way. So this is using, you know, similar technology to a crybaby, similar kind of housing to a crybaby, you know, your regular stomp on and off, with a treadle and chassis. So, yeah, not really sure what to make of this one, really. It's been a weird year for Electro-Harmonix. And we talked about this last week, you know, after last year where they were doing, you know, the K9, the B9, the C9, and they released, like, hundreds of pedals last year. And we should probably work out exactly what that figure is. It's definitely, like, this year they've definitely gone a bit more conservative, because you've got, what did we see come out last week? It was the bass chorus, the bass clone, bass small clone. So a bass chorus, which is cool, you know, nice thing for them to make. They've not really made one before. And yeah, that, I think that works, you know. And this Wailer Wah is a similar thing. They're taking technology and tones that they've already got, but they've put them into a more traditional housing, more pedalboard friendly housing. So yeah, bit of a weird year for Electro-Harmonix. Interesting to see if they're just holding back, if they've got a load of R&D going on in the background, and now they're just to get some stuff released, they are, you know, they're just putting out a couple of bits just to keep things ticking over. I'll be curious to see what they come out with towards, you know, further towards the end of the year, or at NAMM actually. Although they're not a company that does NAMM big, really. They don't, like, release a whole bunch of new products then. Historically, they've been kind of spread out through the year. So Let's see. Let's see what Electromonics have got up their sleeve. Of course, this year I actually did see the Mel line as well, which was the Mellotron, which is a little bit out there. So we'll see. Let's press on with another bit of news. Another new pedal, this time coming from Frederick Effects, a company that we've talked a lot about in regards to their harmonic percolator models, their original harmonic percolator, and more recently the utility percolator, which is one that we have had in at Guitar Nerds here. We've got a demo video ready to go. Keep your eyes on the YouTube channel because that will be coming up at some point. Really cool company in that they're taking kind of more out there pedals, I guess. Some kind of older stuff, you know, going back and finding the original build for the harmonic percolator and that tie-in that we've talked about. The new pedal, the Accomplished Badger, which is probably the best name for a pedal ever, is something a little bit different. It is, they describe it as an always-on pedal, so something that you kind of want to leave on in your signal chain most of the time. It's essentially a boost. It's a germanium transistor gain stage with some new old stock components, and they talk about them being tested for optimal gain and low leakage. What you've got on there is basically, there's also a clean gain in there as well, so it allows you to blend both of them in, so you've got clean gain and the germanium gain. So I imagine one of them is like a clean boost and the other one has got kind of grittier almost fuzz like tones, which is cool. Most boost pedals, I guess, give you know, one option really. They'll either be a kind of a clean boost, or they'll be like a, you know, a treble booster, which is usually kind of breaks up the top end a little bit, gives you a bit of a kind of grindier tone. This looks cool because it's kind of both in one pedal. Not switchable between, there's just an on-off and a volume control, and then you've got your clean gain and your germanium gain. So I'd be really interested to try this one out, and the guys at Frederick, you know, like I said, they sent us the utility percolator, so hopefully we'll be able to get our hands on this as well. Interesting concept, and I do think that it would work as an always-on pedal, you know, just to boost your boost your volume, but also if you want just a little bit of edge on your tone as well. That's how I use the Dunlop Echoplex preamp. I have it on about 9, I guess, 8 or 9, something like that, and what it means is that as well as getting a little volume boost, and the volume boost isn't huge on the Echoplex pre, what it does is more of that kind of adds a bit of sparkle to it and a bit of kind of liveliness. I wonder if the clean circuit on the Accomplished Badger, best name, will be more like that. And I think it will. And then you'll be able to add just a bit of extra grind in there as well from that germanium circuit. So, yeah, interesting little pedal, built in the UK, I believe. And great thing about Frederick Effects is they're never much money, £95. And it's got a picture of a badger on it that's killing a rabbit. Seems to be eating a rabbit. I can't quite see because I've only got a small picture here. But yeah, it's that's maybe why it's accomplished. Job done, basically. So yeah, cool pedal. And again, you know, we're always happy to support kind of British companies, and particularly if they're producing something cool and for not much money. So yeah, £95 for the Accomplished Badger, I think is going to be an interesting pedal to start seeing on people's boards. And hopefully, yeah, like I said, we'll get one here for a review, and should be all good, I think. Let's move on. There is one last bit of news, and this is interesting to me as a guitar nerd, but this is probably about as far from our kind of regular wheelhouse as we normally go. So this is the new Ibanez Gem, one that, you know, we talk a lot about Fender and Gibson on here. Joe Branton talks about his ridiculous brands, his Hagstroms or whatever he's playing this week, his Dan Electros, nonsense. Just get a P-Bass. We don't talk that much about Ibanez, we don't talk about much about more metal guitars in general, I guess. But this, you know, they've always been a big thing because we all come from a retail background and have always dealt with Ibanez. I don't know how I feel about GMs, really. Obviously, because they are so kind of intrinsically tied in with Steve Vai, who's an artist that, personally, I'm not that fussed about. And because there's so much of him kind of in these guitars, you know, with the inlays and the monkey grip on there as well. Yeah, I've always found it hard to get excited about them. So this is a kind of similar thing, really. So this brand new model is the, again, this is another reason why it's difficult to get excited about Ibanez sometimes, is because of the names. This is the GEM77WDPCNL. Any guesses as to what that stands for? I'll let you put those in the Facebook group. So, brand new GEM, basically, new 2016 model. It's got a mahogany body, which I guess is different, because I think usually, you know, it would be like a basswood or basswood for kind of on RGs generally for more of that kind of bright tone. And Ibanez say they've chosen this for more of a rich tone. Rosewood board on there, five-piece maple wizard neck, maple walnut wizard neck. You've also got what they're calling the premium fret edge treatment, which I assume is fret rounding, and edge 02 trim. So all the things you kind of expect. It's weird to see an Ibanez guitar with a mahogany body. I mean, I know there's been some basses with that, but I can't really remember seeing too many RGs, apart from kind of special editions. Certainly not high-end ones. Yeah, really, really interesting to see the mahogany body, I guess. The rest of the guitar I'm not so keen on. So it's got, I believe, a spalted maple pickguard by the looks of things. Yeah, so they just describe it as a wooden pickguard, but to me it looks like, yeah, spalted maple, which is a bit of a weird kind of mix. And then so you've got two Damasio Dark Matter 2 humbuckers in there, and a Dark Matter 2 single coil. And the pickups have got like a weird clockwork cog design on them. It's a real mishmash guitar. Like if you're watching the live stream, you can see I've just put a picture up. But if you're not, I do if you're listening to the podcast, I do recommend go and check this guitar out, because it is a weird choice, a very weird choice. And I know Steve Vai is kind of he's an eccentric guy. His stage outfits and his kind of general persona. Obviously, he's got this kind of slightly kind of prog vibe to him, but this guitar is just a very weird mishmash. But interesting to see them trying stuff with mahogany, and yeah, just a new GM is always something to talk about, isn't it? Because it's been a guitar that's been in production for such a long time. List price on that, $2,266. Yeah, $2,266.65. So way out of my price range anyway. I don't know about you. Obviously, you know, all the GEM series have been, historically, the top-end ones have always been quite expensive. So I'm sure that if for the Steve Vai collector's market out there, particularly in Japan, I'd imagine this is going to be one to pick up. So that's pretty much the news for this week. Normally, you know, we do our little roundtable thing and we do the news and stuff. But I've been playing a bit of guitar. I've been doing some work on Guitar Nerds and stuff this week. But yeah, that's the. But luckily, you know, there's some news items and stuff. So all good. Shall we get down to questions? Questions. Is that how he does it? Something like that, isn't it? I don't know. Joe Branton. So, questions coming in from the Facebook group. I've got plenty from there. We've had some stuff emailed in. But also, if you're watching live, do drop questions in the live chat, because it would be cool to get some from there as well. So, first up this week, Matt says, so, will we be getting a rundown of what you're going to do with the Pink Sparkle? Have you started the mods yet? Matt, the Pink Sparkle Strat, for those who don't know, we're doing a project which I think is going to be called Mod Mode, which is, I bought a Squire Pink Sparkle Affinity Strat because it is the coolest colour. And the guitar is not half bad, it's pretty good actually. It's double humbucker, but you know, it's an okay Strat, it's fine. But the things that we're going to do for Mod Mode, hopefully, is kind of just do it up a little bit. Find some interesting mods that we can do. And I've certainly found some interesting things so far. Matt, I'm not going to tell you exactly what we're doing yet, but let's say the pickups are sorted. We should have an alternate neck sorted. There's some other stuff that we've been approached about that this might be the guitar to try it on. So, yeah, that video is going to go up towards the end of this year, beginning of next year, I believe, which I know seems a long way away, but it is rapidly approaching. So, yeah, kind of keep an eye on the channel for mod mode, because it's going to be an interesting little project, I think. And, we could definitely do some... Definitely do some cool stuff with it. And then after that, I think we're going to expand it out into something we're calling Fun for a Ton, which is going to be all of us getting 100 quid and trying to buy a guitar and do up a guitar for 100 quid that works, I think. So next question is from a different Matt. Matt says, what gear did you use on the Random Heroes stuff? So this is kind of a personal question, because Random Heroes was my band for a long time and still is kind of my band. Every now and then we do some gigs. We're down to about one a year at the moment because people are in their 30s and it's difficult to get together. So Random Heroes is a pop punk band. Started in 2002, and still occasionally doing stuff now. In terms of gear, For me, obviously, you know, I'm the bass player and frontman of the band, I guess. Frontman's a horrible term. I make noises with my mouth as well as making noises with my bass, I guess. So for me, it's always been the same bass. Always been the Sunset Orange Transparent P bass. American Standard from 2003. Before that had a Mexican P bass, which was black, which there's some early Random Heroes recordings that you will have never heard that's got that bass on it. But yeah, apart from that, it's always been this Sunset Orange Transparent, which I bought from GAC when I was working there. And that bass, man, there's something about that bass. I know I've said it before, but it's the best bass in the world. It's got something about it. It's had tuners replaced. It had to have the pickup rewound, I believe. Yes, it did. It was rewound. So I was going to replace it, and I got Reese from Bigfoot Engineering to rewind it for me, because that's something he can do because he's a genius. And it came back sounding better than ever. And more recently, had it refretted actually with stainless steel frets, because 10 or 11 years worth of touring had completely destroyed them, particularly when I use very heavy strings. I use either Power Slinkies or the Daddario Balanced Tension 120 BTs. I think they're called... No, they go up to a 120, but that's not what the set is called. They're a 120 on the E string, basically. But because they're this balanced tension, it feels kind of even across the neck. That's an awesome set of bass strings, by the way. You should definitely go and check that out. So yeah, mostly it's, well, for all the recordings that you will have heard if you have listened to the band at all, it's that P bass. Been offered other things. We used to go and record with a guy called Peter Miles down in Devon, who is an awesome producer. He used to say, like, you've got to play this. He's got an amazing 70s P bass, and he was always like, you should use this. And every time I turned it down, because that bass is so intrinsically linked with my bass sound, you can kind of put it into different amps and stuff, and it always, there's something about that bass and me that make the same sound every time. And the amps actually on the recordings have been a little bit kind of scattershot, really. So on the Random Heroes album, it was an SVT Classic into an 810, into another one was a Mark bass head, the little Mark that I've got, into an 810. And I've also used a B15, Ampeg B15, into a guitar, Blackstar Guitar 412, which was a really interesting sound as well. A bit more kind of grindy. Used that on a couple of bits as well. So, yeah, that for the bass, it's always basically that 2013 P bass and my mouth making terrible singing sounds. So, yeah, it was a punk band, so you can get away with terrible singing. And for the guitars, pretty much it's always been like Les Paul Juniors. On the album, Ben was playing my Les Paul Junior, again, 2003, Les Paul Jr. And then what else have we done? So we did another album under a slightly different name, Corrigan, which is Random Heroes kind of Mark II, but now is all lumped in. There's a Random Heroes collection on Bandcamp, which has got the Corrigan album on it. That is a 335 into a Marshall of some description. And now the guys in the band it's the original guitarist again, who uses a Strat with a humbucker. So if you ever come see us live now, that's what he's using, Strat with a humbucker. And Dan Grace is also in the band, who's a long-time Guitar Nerds collaborator. He's on, you know, at least one of the Guitar Nerds YouTube videos, and he was on the GAC podcast a couple times. He uses Les Paul Jr. a lot of the time. Does he use a Les Paul Jr. now? I can't remember. Something with P90s. He had an SG with P90s, I think, and last time I saw him. It's all about P90s, and it's all about P basses. Just, yeah, that's what you should use if you're in a punk band. You should definitely use that if you're in a punk band. Anyway, I hope that clears things up. If you want to find that music, by the way, and I'm not sure I recommend you do, because a lot of it is very old. I think it's randomheroes.bandcamp.com. I can't remember. If you Google Random Heroes Brighton or Random Heroes UK, you should be able to find it. Okay, let's take one from the Amplify group. Harry C says, you mentioned you work at GAC. You worked at GAC. What was your experience in the guitar retail world like? Very good on the whole. I was on the shop floor for about 10 years. I did work experience when I was 14. But I started properly when I was 16. And took some time out to do uni and things like that, but roughly about 10 years of retail. Very good. And I think I was very lucky to have experienced the time when the internet didn't really exist in retail and when the internet did exist. Because it used to be really easy to sell guitars. When people came in, you know, there was always enough money to kind of do them a deal. And that was good fun. Really enjoyed kind of like talking to people about guitars and making sure they got a good retail experience and offering them a kind of bit of a deal at the end of things. I think that's a really important... I'm actually doing a video on this soon. We've got a video in the works called The Top 5 Ways to Survive a Guitar Shop, which is actually about being a customer in a guitar shop. But one of the things is like, be nice and ask for a deal, but don't expect to get a deal, which I think are the rules to live by, really, when you're buying a guitar. Like, be nice to whoever's serving you, no matter how hungover or surly they might be, and you're more likely to get a deal. And at the end of things, ask for a deal, but don't expect one. Because of the internet now, you know, there's not always a deal to be had, unfortunately. So, yeah, my experience in retail, very good. A great way to grow up, really. I'm kind of thankful that I did that, and it's something that we could maybe talk about. A great way to start your working life, I think, is starting off in retail.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tell and starting off selling something you love because you're kind of following a passion. And it also made it really easy to follow music stuff, like band stuff, because I had access to guitars. You know, if I wanted them, you know, you could get them, you know, on a bit of a kind of staff deal. And if I wanted to get spares or strings and stuff, then that stuff was all kind of readily available for me to buy. And being in that world for such a long time was cool. You know, it's going away and now I just do an office job, which is cool as well. Because, you know, it's a completely different environment. But it's not a particularly rock and roll job. You know, in a guitar shop is a rock and roll job and you get to meet loads of people. And if you're an aspiring musician, that's a really, really cool way to kind of be in that world on a daily basis without, you know, being on tour all the time, which is kind of not possible, really, particularly if you're in a punk band, because there's not that many opportunities out there. It's not music that the mainstream people like to listen to. What was the question? I've completely forgotten. Worked in retail. What was your experience like? I guess that is the experience. A really good place to grow up. Really enjoyed selling guitars and being around guitars every day. And it gave me a great opportunity to be involved with music and learn some really important skills as well. So that's my experience. Guitar shops are a cool place to be. When you're in there, make sure you're nice to the staff and hopefully they'll be nice to you back. Someone called McCrab on the live chat says, on another one on the retail side of things, roughly what proportion of sales were bass compared to six string? 10%? 15%? Not a huge amount. I think it depends on where you work. Obviously, somewhere like, you know, Bass Direct or somewhere like that, where they're just selling basses, obviously bass is most of their thing. In the shop that I worked in, you know, we had a huge space dedicated to guitars and a very good bass section, which I was, you know, the manager of for a little while. And that's when it looked best, definitely. No, it looks great now. It looks really good now. 10%, something like that. So most bands have two guitarists and a drummer. Yeah. 10%, something like that. 10 to 20%, I guess, of the band is made up of bass players. So that's probably the amount that you sell, I guess. Let's do one more live question. Burger King One says, looking to get some kind of direct in / desk style distortion pedal. Any ideas for getting that sound live? Some kind of direct in desk style distortion pedal. So I think what he means is like the sound of plugging a guitar straight into a desk. I'll tell you what would probably be good for this. Electro Harmonix do a pedal called the Satisfaction Fuzz, which, as you can guess by the name, it's based on the kind of Rolling Stones Satisfaction kind of torn speaker, early 60s style fuzz, Velcro ripped fuzz. That would probably do that sound very, very well. It's a pedal that I only got to spend a little bit of time with and was kind of confused by it, really. Because it's not, when you put that sound in today's context, like with the range of fuzzes that we've got now, when you hear like an old style fuzz, they sound so weird. They sound so out of place. There's also another pedal actually, the Twin Bender by Ramble Effects, which does a similar thing. It's got two old style fuzzes in there, based on Tone Bender and something else. But it's got a bias control, so it's like controlling the power. And if you wanted to get a kind of, you know, that kind of broken guitar sound you get from plugging a guitar straight in, I'm thinking like John Lennon, end of the Beatles, plugging straight into the desk kind of vibe, that would probably do it. Ramble Effects Twin Bender, or if you want to spend a bit less money, the Electro Harmonix Satisfaction Fuzz gives you a really kind of broken 60s style style fuzz. So cool little pedals. Let's do one from the Facebook group. Andy says, I've been enjoying the Albums That Changed My Life articles that seem to be doing the rounds at the moment. And while this has been a thread on here before, it got me thinking about what's the last album that had any effect on my playing. always been a heavy metal slash hard rock kind of player, so my list would be bands like Deftones, Metallica and Black Label Society, but the new Wes Borland album has got me thinking of spacey synths and clean ambient drones dripping in reverb. Now guessing hard for a Big Sky. What was the last album that you got that made you think about how you play your gear or the gear you use? So, for me, a couple of things came up here. So, firstly, I really, really don't like Metallica. And as someone in a kind of like in the guitar world, that's kind of a bit of a blasphemy. But I just never got it. I don't understand. The old stuff sounds archaic to me in a way that I just can't get over the 80s-ness of it. And then the stuff, you know, like with the orchestra and the kind of slower stuff just holds no appeal for me. And then more, the newer stuff with better production, by all accounts, is just not their best stuff. So I think I've kind of just missed the boat on Metallica. But, and this is a big but, the new single, which I think is called Hardwired, is one of my songs of the year. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I'm sure the guys in the live chat or in the Facebook group, if you're not watching live, you'll probably agree if you've heard it. Compared to, and I don't know a huge amount about Metallica. Like I said, I've listened to the old stuff. I don't get the production. It just seems old for me. I've listened to the new stuff, and it just doesn't sound very good. But the new single seems to have, like, the hard kind of thrashy edge of the old stuff with new, really, really good production. So that's a song that recently, and it's not going to change my playing at all. I just wanted to talk about how, like, albums that have changed your life. I never thought that I'd be, like, waiting for the release of a new Metallica album. But I totally am. I think it's going to rock. If that single is any, you know, they might have just kind of struck gold with one song. But that, if that's any indicator of how the album's going to be, I'm really looking forward to the new Metallica album, which is weird. Really weird. Some other stuff that came up, I wanted to talk about, firstly, one that's not an album, then some albums that have influenced me, and also some other new music that I'm listening to, which I think you guys should check out. So, I wanted to talk about the first, well, one of the first real punk gigs that I went to, which really made me think about, like, the kind of music that I was doing, and the kind of, like, what music could be a little bit. And I know it sounds a bit, like, idealistic, but so I was kind of listening, early 2000s, I was kind of listening to, so straight out of school, I kind of got into Nirvana, and then you follow that trail down, like, Pixies, and that more kind of alt-rock thing. And I happened to go to a gig. One day I went into HMV with my dad, and my dad was like, "You like punk, don't you? There's a CD down there that says Punkorama." And it's like, okay, that sounds good. It's like £5, and there's 20 songs on here. And that turned out to be one of the Epitaph Records compilations, where it was like Punkorama 4, I think, or Punkorama 3, something like that. And it was when Epitaph were putting out incredible punk bands, Bad Religion, Bouncing Souls, NoFX, all the kind of, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, skate punk and kind of pop punk that's still good. So got that, and it had like the Hives and stuff on there as well, Rancid, yeah, loads of cool stuff. And that got me into the more kind of underground stuff. I was listening to, you know, straight out of school, I was listening to like Blink-182, like I said, Nirvana and Pixies, and then started getting into the kind of Southern California underground stuff. And just happened to see one day that the Bouncing Souls, who were a band on Epitaph, were playing locally, and went to that, and that was a straight up eye opener. Seeing a band that I'd heard on a record play in a place that's pretty small, seeing people get on stage and stage dive, that changed my life, really. And it sounds a bit over dramatic, but that day definitely did change my life. I wouldn't be doing this podcast right now, I don't think, if I'd done that. I was kind of into guitars, but in a way that was like, this is a bit of a hobby. I don't really know how to make the music that Pixies are making, or as basic as it is, I don't know how to make the music that Nirvana are making, but I knew how to make the music that was on Punkorama and the music that the Bouncing Souls were playing, because it was so basic and so much like the rock and roll that I listened to as a kid, but more exciting. And so that made me think, okay, I can do this. I'm gonna, get a bass and get a punk band together. And that's the reason that I'm kind of here now. Still worked at the guitar shop for a long time because I was doing this punk music. Still, you know, hanging out and doing something like this, I think, is kind of a punk thing. We didn't, when we were doing Guitar Nerds, we didn't get together and go, okay, you know, we all really like guitars. Shall we go out and try and get jobs at Guitarist magazine, or should we try? It was like, no. You do it yourself. Do it yourself. And that's what Guitar Nerds is. And that all comes back to this one day of seeing the Bouncing Souls essentially doing it themselves. They're on Epitaph Records, but they would book their own tours. And actually a really good, talking about the Bouncing Souls, and we're way off topic here, but talking about the Bouncing Souls, there's a documentary you should check out if you want a really good music documentary. I think it's called Do You Remember? It's 15 years of the Bouncing Souls, so it's about 10 years old at this point, maybe even more. Go and check that documentary out. For anyone, I think it's on YouTube. I'm sure it's on YouTube. For anyone who is into just being in bands and having, it really is kind of like a prototype for how Guitar Nerds works, which is like a punk band about guitar journalism, is kind of how I view it. It's kind of a prototype for that. It's four mates hanging out and making something happen. And that's kind of what we're doing here. And again, it all comes back to that day. So yeah, just wanted to talk about that. And this is really far off topic, and maybe we should talk about this, you know, when the other guys are here. But that really is the kind of nucleus of everything I've kind of done since. And it kind of, comes into line with this, Albums That Changed Your Life. This was a gig that 100% changed my life. I might put some like soppy violin music under that. I don't know. Anyway, other things that have changed my life, going back to punk stuff, I guess. Well, there's two albums that changed my life, actually. Beatles Live at the BBC, which when I was maybe 8 or 9, the only music that I listened to as a child was Michael Jackson all the time. And now that has a strange connotation, but at the time, I guess, you know, when did Dangerous come out? 91, I think, because didn't Teen Spirit knock one of the singles from Dangerous off the charts? I think it did. So it must have come out in 91. Michael Jackson was like at his peak, and all I was listening to was Bad, Thriller and Dangerous every day, just wearing the tapes out. And then I went to my granddad's house and found Beatles at the BBC, which was one of the only cassettes that he had that wasn't The Shadows. And I'm so glad that I picked that one out and got into that than picking out the greatest hits of The Shadows or whatever. So, I've just noticed the stream is actually frozen. So I hope you guys can still follow. If not, you're listening on the podcast, so it's all cool. I picked out Beatles Live at the BBC, and I'd never really heard of the Beatles. I'd heard of the Beatles, obviously, but I'd never really heard of the Beatles because my dad is only, he just loves soul music. So our house was all soul music. Otis Redding, Motown stuff, you know, Temptations, Dinah Ross, all that. And we'd never had Beatles records in the house. And I put on this compilation and was like, wow, this is incredible. This sounds like the Chuck Berry stuff that I've been listening to, but with just more about it, more kind of pop that I was kind of getting from the Michael Jackson stuff and the stuff I was hearing in the charts. So, yeah, really. So that album, although it's not a fantastic album, and it's a great time capsule of you know, that time and them doing the BBC sessions and stuff, that's a record that kind of got me into the Beatles. So that is definitely a big one. And, you know, the Beatles follows on everything else, and leads into, you know, liking that rock and roll stuff, leads into the more punk stuff, obviously, later down the line. The other one, which is a record you should go and check out, is a record called My Brain Hurts by a band called Screeching Weasel, who I've talked about quite a lot on the podcast. probably as a punk musician, probably my biggest influence, taking simple songs, occasionally very complicated ideas. There's a track on My Brain Hurts called The Science of Myth, which is about the constant struggle between science and religion in society. And it's the catchiest song you've ever heard. It's a very dense, complicated song, lyrically and thematically, but it's the Ramones. And if that sounds cool to you, you should check out that whole album, because that is what that album is like. There's a lot of very catchy, very poppy songs dealing with a lot of complicated issues, both in society and personally. So, yeah, that kind of showed me that you could do, like, you know, the Blink-182 stuff and the more kind of pop punk that I was listening to, and with the street punky stuff, you know, Rancid, Bouncing Souls, that kind of thing. But you could take also some fairly complicated issues. And also, another great thing about that record is how to structure an album. The way that that album is structured and the way that it's the track list goes is absolutely perfect. It's a lesson in that. So definitely check that record out. That completely changed my ideas about like what punk could be. I always knew punk was political, but never really know it could be personal and dealing with things like religion in a non-negative. I'm not a religious person at all, but that album deals with, particularly on that track, deals with religion in a not just let's just cast this aside because we're punk and rebellious. It's let's work out the important role or the role that this plays in society historically. So definitely worth checking that record out. I did say that I was going to give a kind of shout-out to a record I've been listening to recently. Came out a couple of days ago. London band, I believe London, called The Tuts, have just put out a record. I can't remember what the name is. Update Your Brain or something like that. Something around that. But if you just Spotify or whatever you listen to music on, search for The Tuts, it will be their last release. Absolutely blowing my mind. Again, it's more punk. It's three women musicians doing kind of 60s girl group harmonies, but with kind of garage punk sensibility in there as well. So that's definitely worth checking out. Also worth checking out because the guitar they use is fantastic. Or the guitar that the I forget what the singer's name is, but she is using a 3 pickup SG Custom, and I think it's worth going to see them live because they're an awesome band, but worth going to see them live to see one of those guitars in the flesh. Like one of the coolest guitars ever, that ebony white SG Custom gold hardware is just phenomenal. Apologies if you're still trying to watch live. It looks like the stream has frozen, but if you can still hear me, that's good, because we've still got it going on. Let's take another question from the Facebook group, just in case the stream has gone down and I'm not going to be getting any more chat questions. Let's have a look. Okay, if you had the choice of only one guitar, one amp, and 4 pedals for the rest of time, what pedals would you choose to go with your Blues Junior and Baja Telly? I see what you've done there, Adam. What you've done is you've lured me in with a question and you've put a gag at the end. And the gag was good because I didn't read the question before I read it out. That's good. I don't think I would have a Blues Junior and a Baja Telly. If I could only have one instrument for the rest of my life, I think I would go with the P-Bass. It's got to be the P-Bass. Like, I love that Les Paul Junior that I've got. It's from the same time. It's from, like, you know, I've had that guitar for 13 years. So, yeah, I would, in a fire, I would really want to keep that guitar as well. But the one I would save, if I could only save one, is the Sunset Orange Transparent P-Bass 2003, which is the best bass I've ever played, the best instrument I've ever played, and the one that, you know, it's done however many gigs I've done, 500-600 gigs with that bass, and yeah, I'm kind of tied to it intrinsically. It's like, that is my sound. And if I had to save one amp, if I only had to play one amp with that bass, again, it's got to be the thing that I already own, which is the Mark Bass Little Mark, the original version, which, despite Joe Branton's protestations, I think is the best bass amp for my sound. I really like Ampeg stuff. I like the grind of Ampeg stuff, but it's just too big and heavy for what I would want. That Mark bass does it very, very well, and there's a real interplay between my bass and that amp that is super cool. Just loads of, so much stuff tied up in there, like loads of good memories of doing a lot of touring. I'd have that, if I could, I'd have that amp with the 610 that I used to have, the Mark Bass 610, because that was my main touring rig for years, and that was such a cool bass sound, such a cool bass sound. Gone through kind of like thick and thin with that rig. And I remember bringing it home the first time and my dad seeing it and just being like, what have you done? Why are you bringing this into our house? It's 610, it's massive. Yeah, he wasn't impressed. But that stayed with me for years. And that kind of throughout the touring years, that was the rig that I was using. And yeah, just an awesome sound. So the four pedals, if I'm going to use it on that rig, what would I use? A Boss TU-2, definitely, because that is the tuner to use. On bass, what would I use? I probably, if I could only have these, I'm assuming I'm on some desert island somewhere, so probably a looper. And I'd have to probably get the most complicated looper, I guess, if I want to be able to do the most stuff. Yeah, I mean, do I go most complicated or most simple? Let's go ditto looper. I would go for a Line 6 M5, which I guess is cheating a bit, because that is a multi-effects. But it's a simple one, I guess. So I'd go M5, because that gives me a few different sounds. What else on bass? It's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult on bass. I'm yet to try the Echoplex preamp on bass, but I think it would probably do a good job. I think it would probably be quite good. So I'll go for that, even though it's not a bass pedal. I don't know. In reality, I don't know what I'd take. I don't know what I'd take for the last pedal, but that would probably do me. So, yeah, that would be my rig. That would be my kind of desert island rig. And, you know, luckily, I still own most of that stuff or have owned it. So let's do one more from the group. Let's do some more from the group. I'm going to maybe try and do 5 or 10 more minutes worth of stream. So if you are watching live, do keep sending in questions, because I will try and get round to them. So Joshua in the Facebook group says, I'm torn between the TC Alter Ego and the MXR Carbon Copy. Did we do this question last week? I can't remember. I think we might have done this question last week. I'll answer it again, though. I'm torn between the TC Alter Ego and the MXR Carbon Copy. I like the features of the TC, but the Carbon Copy is just something wonderful and soupy about the repeats, in that they almost don't feel like repeats. Which should I get? So TC Alter Ego or the MXR Carbon Copy. I've got an Alter Ego on my board just because I bought it a little while ago. In fact, I think I bought it from Matt Knight a little while ago. And it was the it was just a delay pedal to get when I was building my board. And it is cool. There's a lot of sounds on there. I found a couple that I'm really happy with. There's some stuff on there that's pretty useless, to be honest. I actually do like the option of reverse delay. Like I've said earlier in the podcast, massive Beatles fan. So, so I use that quite a lot. But I probably would still go for the Carbon Copy, particularly the Carbon Copy Bright these days, because I think it's, if you want some definition to the sound, the Carbon Copy Bright is a really, really good option. And it looks a bit cooler as well. I prefer the finish on that to the dark one. But they're both really good. I was talking to a friend, actually, at the weekend who bought a Carbon Copy from me a little while ago. And he has been telling me how he's been using it for tracking and how he's been running individual like drum tracks and stuff through it to get like really cool sounds, because it really is a delay pedal that, you know, it's using it's going for kind of old analog sound. So if you want to warm something up, as well as putting a guitar through it in the front end, if you wanted to put, like, you know, your snare through it or something for more kind of dub kind of textures, it could definitely handle that as well. And that's the advantage of that over something like the TC is that you get that instant analog kind of warmth, where the TC is, I guess it's more of a, it's more flexible, which is why I've kept it on my board, because I'm not that tied down to my guitar effects, because I'm mainly a bass player. So it's a cool thing to have, so I can flick through some different different options and stuff. So yeah, it depends what you want, but I like them both. Let's do. Which one shall we do? Ah, okay, so Marcus says, "Hello, fellow nerds. I'm currently building my first pedal board, and I was wondering where to put the Velcro pads when pedals have rubber feet on them. Should I take them off? If so, how? Hoping for some answers." Yes, Marcus, and I think Matt actually already replied in the group. Definitely take the feet off. If it's on a wah, you need to unscrew the feet. And so, like, if it's on a Crybaby, for example, you need to unscrew the feet, take the rubber feet off, and then put the screws back in to hold the base of the chassis back. And that will allow you to put some Velcro on there. With things like, what has them on there? A lot of pedals actually ship without them now, but ship with it like a pack of the feet. If there's feet already on there, you can generally just kind of like get a plectrum or something in underneath there and just kind of like peel them off a bit. Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do, but that is definitely take the feet off if you're thinking about putting them on a board. You can always buy packs of like adhesive feet afterwards. So if you're thinking of selling it down the line, or you're thinking of doing something without a board, you can buy spare packs of feet. So you just pop those on there. So yeah, definitely if it's going on the board, take the feet off, get that Velcro on there. Don't try and, I've done that in the past, like trying to Velcro like over the feet and stuff. It's just rubbish. It just doesn't work. So anyway, I think we're nearly up at an hour. My voice is about to go, so we should probably call it a night there. If you stuck with me to the end of this, thanks very much. It's been a bit weird not having the other guys here. And so, you know, we've talked about some different stuff. We've talked about some stories that aren't guitar related and they're more music related. Your homework for next week is listen to the new Metallica record, the new single. Check out the Tuts album, which is very, very good. Watch that Bouncing Souls documentary, 15 Years of the Bouncing Souls, which is up on YouTube. And also listen to Screech and Weasel. Listen to My Brain Hurts by Screech and Weasel in particular, because it's not up on Spotify. They're not big fans of Spotify, but you can find it on YouTube and stuff. So go and listen to that record. There's a few tunes on there that are, legitimately changed my life. So definitely worth checking out. Want to say thanks to all the Patreon backers. We've had a few new Patreon backers this week. A few people signing up at the $5 tier, a few at the $10, well, another one at the $10 tier. What I'm going to do is we'd normally do some music while Joe reads these out, but I'm going to read them out and put some music underneath. Worth mentioning, by the way, if you don't know what Patreon is, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. You can now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, get it delivered to your regular podcast platform, so you don't have to go to the Patreon site or don't have to go to the Patreon app. You can get it just delivered into podcasts or into Downcast or whatever you use. Plus also, you can go and listen to old content. So now there's like 40 or 50 hours. I forget exactly how much there is on there, but 40 or 50 hours worth of stuff that you can dive back into once you sign up. So that will keep you going for a long old time, I'd imagine. So at the $5 tier, you get the extra half an hour. At the $10 tier, you get the extra half an hour, and you also become one of our Patreon backers, like these people: Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Mancha, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, JD Short, David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moog Gravett, and Colin Anderson. If you were watching live, that's going to be weird without any music under, but if you're listening to the podcast, you should have just heard some music. So thanks very much for everyone who's contributed to the Patreon. The more people that do that, the more we can do, you know, more we can get out and do fun stuff. We've talked about doing some factory tours and stuff. That's what we're using the Patreon money for, and we're using it to kind of fund things like We'll probably put some towards Fun for a Ton. So we're using it to all just make new content for you guys, and gives us time to not have to worry about how we're funding that, so we can also go and do other things like the interviews that we're doing on the Patreon channel, and some of the cool stuff that we're doing on YouTube as well. So yeah, so much appreciated from our end. It's awesome. If you want to watch the show live every week, as some of you have been doing, ampli.fi/guitar nerds, where every Tuesday night, 8:30 UK time, usually me and the three other lads will be doing an hour's worth of content live, and you can join us as people have this evening with questions. Another thing, if you are just a podcast listener, do us a favour, go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review on the podcast, because that's how the podcast gets noticed. That's how we get more people involved in Guitar Nerds, more people in the group, hopefully more people on the Patreon, which then means we can go and do more cool stuff. Shout out to, you know, your other guitar playing friends, get them listening, get them leaving reviews, and, you know, we can build this thing. Like I said, this is a punk band. It's four friends doing guitar journalism, I guess, if you want to call it that, and we want to build it, and we want to bring you all on this kind of journey with us. So yeah, anything you can do, leave reviews, shout out us on Twitter, or put it in your personal Facebook feed, or whatever you want to do. If you can help Guitar Nerds in any way, that would be awesome. If you want to tag us on Twitter, it's @GuitarNerds, on Instagram @GuitarNerds. You can tag us personally if you want, @MarkRandom, @JAYBN1, @Matt_Knightsey, and @Joseph_900. Go to the website as well. New news articles going up there all the time. We've got new like top tens and stuff on the YouTube.com /guitar nerds videos. They also get duplicated onto the site, guitarnerds.net. Loads of stuff, basically. There's loads going on. I hope this has been okay. I hope this has been listenable. And if you've got this far, thanks so much for sticking through to the end. Hopefully next week, normal service will be resumed. But knowing that we can do this from home does give me some ideas. Gives me some big ideas for more stuff coming soon. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Thanks very much. Bye.